Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, Gale Force 9 lawsuit settled.
Oh.
The One Ring by Free League comes to Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. And because of The One Ring, I thought we would talk a little bit about the history of the Lord of the Rings RPGs. Kind of go through, like, you know, where they came from and where they're at. Because this is technically the second edition of
The One Ring,
the Cubicle 7 version. All right, so I guess we can start. If you recall, so the conspiracy is falling apart, basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Gale Force 9 has settled now. So this is just on the heels of the case being dismissed, or I guess settled out of court with the Dragonlance.
Oh, that was settled. Okay.
Yeah.
I hadn't followed up on that.
So that had happened, and now Gale Force 9. So if you remember, Gale Force 9 was having some, there were complaints from Wizards of the Coast about the quality of some of their localization and translations.
Right, which hadn't happened before.
Right, it never happened before, and suddenly they're unhappy with their work and holding, they're doing that Disney thing. We're like, we don't have to pay you, really, do we? Right, big enough to bully you? And so the case was for almost $1 million.
Wow.
And so it was settled, and no costs or fees were assigned. So everyone's just going to go their own way.
So basically, Watsi just said, or Hasbro said, never mind.
Yeah, I think so. Right. I think it was just like, yeah, let's not do this. so we don't know quite what started that and why that suddenly, I mean, the beginning of the year, just boom, boom, both of these lawsuits are just over with. And so that will mean also, so the first lawsuit being settled means the classic Dragonlance novels are back in fashion. And the first of the new trilogy is due out later this year.
Oh, so they're going forward.
They are. Yeah. So I guess I'm assuming that's the same thing with Gale Force 9, that they're still going to be doing localization. It doesn't say that they're ending their relationship.
Right. But who knows what's going on behind the scenes and what people are allowed to say.
That's the thing. When things are dismissed, and that's the strategy. If you settle something out of court, then nothing is public record. No wrongdoing is admitted, and you just give somebody some money under the table, and they just, you know, stop complaining. So that's the end of that. So that was the fun conspiracy at the end of the year, but it doesn't look like it doesn't look like that will be the case.
My brain just shut off. I was going to have a phrase. It's like, along with conspiracies, I think I saw something about the D&D movie.
Oh,
kind of going forward, or at least, you know, like two actors
casting,
who I have no idea who they are getting attached.
Oh, sure, you do.
So, no, I know.
Chris Pine was the original casting, Michelle Rodriguez, and the kid from Detective Pikachu.
Okay, I guess that's kind of why the picture of the actor was vaguely familiar.
Like, right.
I haven't seen Detective Pikachu, so I...
Oh, sure.
I'm not admitting to that one, all right? Whatever you want to do, but just conspiracy. Okay, that going forward, maybe Watsi... I seriously doubt this is the case, but maybe Watsi is like, let's settle this nonsense so we don't look bad.
Right.
Yeah, too late for that.
I guess that is moving forward, but it's kind of... It's an eclectic cast reminiscent
of... Like the first one was so great.
No, but like reminiscent of Jeremy Irons and one of the Wayans brothers. And so it's looking like that already, that there's going to be a silly thief, you know, a silly madcap thief and a you know, I'm sure Michelle Rodriguez is a noble paladin? I don't know.
Don't care. Not seeing it. Movies will probably not exist by the time it comes out.
Right. So we'll see. But speaking of fantasy RPGs,
right?
As of this recording, the Kickstarter just began for campaign for Free League's essentially 2.0 or a second edition of the One Ring RPG. So previously, the first edition was published by Cubicle 7, and I guess they lost the rights or lost the relationship with the company that held the rights, because they mention a company that is the rights holder on their Kickstarter page. So Sophisticated Games.
Yeah. Sorry, so do you mean like another company holds the rights to like the game? Or are we talking kind of like rights to Tolkien IP?
Tolkien IP for publishing, sake of the purpose of publishing games.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, for tabletop.
Right.
Yeah, so they mentioned Sophisticated Games in the description for their in cooperation with that company. And that company claims we've been publishing Tolkien-related tabletop for 10 years.
Have you just been like just farming that just IP checking, out to people who are... I mean, and that's not tossing them under the bus. You know, I have known nothing about publishing, but it kind of seems like you're just farming that IP out to other publishers.
I think they probably had a relationship that they're not going to get rid of. But how they're talking about this new rule set being an updated and streamlined version of the 1E rules and developed with the original designer as well. So it'll be a new setting, the lower lands of... the setting is the lone lands of Irador, and that the year setting is 2965 of the Third Age. So I think it's going to be close. It's one ring, so it's going to be the time of the rise of Sauron and Mordor starting to turn back on again. And
just plug that in.
And so it's a complete visual redesign. So none of the original artwork or anything, but it's got that nice. The pages that they're showing are absolutely gorgeous. So they've got the Martin Grip, of course, is doing the kind of more digital painting illustrations, but they've also got a lot of the people that worked on Forbidden Lands, and it's just there's some great, really great fantasy illustrators in there that it's Tolkien like you haven't really seen before, because it's not the standard.
This is not your daddy's Tolkien, is what I heard. Yeah.
But it's not as classical a take on Tolkien. It's pretty dark, like the Martin Grip stuff, just like the Alien work. It's and also like Symborum.
Yeah.
Like it looks like more Symborum toned Tolkien, which is interesting. And then the
how are they going to work Tom Bombadil in? Sorry, I keep interrupting.
He's got a dirty yellow hat, but so it'll it has a really nice visual style, and I'm glad that they were showing that off on the...
I haven't looked at the Kickstarter page. I only just got the email, and saw I guess it's a mock-up of the cover, or maybe it's a finished cover. And it looked nice, and...
Yeah. A couple of things, though.
Right, okay.
Made me... Okay, so we've had Alien, and I think that worked well, and the system worked well. But we playtested Dune. That's Modiphius. Modiphius Dune, because that's another big IP, and I got this feeling from that. And now their description of what you're doing I never played the One Ring. I never played the first team. But their description is players create individuals who led an ordinary life until something made them realize that they were simply pretending that shadows weren't growing nearer and nearer. So you're just kind of regular guys, but you start your own fellowship? I don't know.
Well, maybe I'm jumping ahead in the plot here.
Right.
I'm sure a lot of people like the One Ring.
Mm-hmm.
The One Ring, for me, suffers, and again, I've never played it, but the idea of playing it, system aside, that I know nothing about, and maybe it's fantastic, I've kind of thought, maybe this suffers from the same problem that games based around an IP that kind of have a single protagonist or like a set finished plot line also suffer from, where what do you do?
Yes.
Right?
Right?
Like, okay, I know we've set the One Ring in a time before the Fellowship of the Ring and probably possibly even like, I guess before the movie, the Hobbit, the events of the Hobbit, but we know what happens to the ring, right? Like, we know what happened to the ring. Okay, it was lost for a while, and we know what happens to the ring.
Right.
So it seems like you're playing within a really defined space that kind of has one outcome. I mean, unless you're kind of allowed, which, I mean, it's your game, so you can do whatever the heck you want, but unless the conceit of the game is you can possibly like prevent the events of, you know, the Hobbit and the Lord of the Rings from happening, which would be cool.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's possible given the game or what they're going for.
Right.
And it kind of seems like it suffers for me from the problem of why would I want to play in something that's already so defined and has a predetermined outcome.
Right. I mean, the quest is so huge. It's, you know, it's world saving and it's so epic. And, you know, so I guess just don't screw it up is the...
But I don't know. Like, I don't even know if you get to be the... Like, it sounds to me like you don't get to play the Fellowship.
Right, right.
Right?
Well, I'm not sure. Yeah, they talk about phases of the game. So that makes me think a little bit. So similar to what Dune was doing, where there's a strategic level and then a player level, where you're kind of... You're doing the single character role playing, but then you're also doing kind of your house management. Right. and you know, fighting wars and espionage and things. There are two alternate phases. So the adventuring phase and the fellowship phase. So this structure follows the deeds of the players, not only geographically, but as they explore the land in pursuit of their goals, but also chronologically as time passes and the twilight of the Third Age unfolds. So, yeah, so I think that's what you're kind of, maybe you're moving a clock or something. Yeah, the ring is like, you know, moving closer to Mount Doom. But the other thing that makes me wonder is it's saying the new edition will be compatible with modules from the first edition, just with a little tweaking. Okay. So a lot of the adventures then are already, there's already a lot written. There's a ton of stuff from Cubicle 7 for the One Ring. So yeah, I'm not sure. But yeah, I did have that feeling of, okay, so we're peripheral guys. And oh, hey, look, there's Frodo. And oh, okay.
Yeah, like I'm sure those kind of games can be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's maybe kind of like the Star Wars universe, where even though we have this main storyline, there's so much stuff going on in the periphery that you can tell your own stories. Mm. But I don't know. I guess the difference, and I'm not a huge Star Wars fan that much anymore, but Star Wars was like a whole galaxy, right? Like you could be doing anything and everything just super far away from that main plot line and almost kind of have a completely different game, which leads to the question, why play Star Wars even at all then? But Middle-earth. I'm sure, like, expansive, sure, especially since you're mostly slogging on foot or on horses, but the scope seems a lot smaller, and therefore playing periphery people in the story kind of seems a little less appealing to me.
Right. Yeah, I played a little bit of the Lord of the Rings Online, the MMO, the PC MMO.
It's the one that uses the Nemesis system?
Oh no, that's okay. No, it's not the patented Nemesis system. No, this was an older, and it had that kind of feeling. You made an elf, and you're just kind of walking around, and you're like, oh, I get
hey,
to, it's that same thing. So, I mean, I think they've already figured this out.
Right.
I mean,
oh yeah, I'm sure they have.
Certain people that know the One Ring are like, what are you guys talking about? But I'm
could
still
you be any more wrong.
So I'm getting the. Maybe I'm getting the wrong feeling, but it's just, and I think that's why I've never played a Lord of the Rings game. I love that lore and I love that setting, but I'm like, well, there's one big quest and how are we involved? I mean, we're just affected by it. It's like, things are getting more evil. Ah, things are less evil now. The ring must be destroyed.
Yeah.
I guess you can just run a shop the whole time and it's like, it's feeling really dark and
I'm
evil.
I'm tired of dealing with these Nazgul customers. Oh, look, here comes a regular hobbit again. Yeah, the ring has been destroyed. Yeah.
Oh, they're scouring the Shire. Oh. But the interesting thing they're doing, and this is similar to what they did for the Twilight game, the Twilight 2000, or what did they call it?
Twilight 2000 game.
Is they're doing, there's a box set, or I mean, not actually Twilight 2000, the campaign looks similar, like what they were showing with maps and tokens and boxes and stuff, but they're doing the rule book and also a deluxe version, of course, then a starter set.
Okay.
So you can get both the core book and the starter set. The starter set is, you know, of course, everything to start playing, a small rule set and a pre-gen characters and a map and all that good stuff and custom dice. Mm-hmm. And this is set in the Shire. So it focuses on the Shire. And I think all of the pre-generated characters are hobbits. So you're kind of starting there. So that was an interesting, I was like, okay, I guess, is that going to really give you the flavor of the game? I mean, that's where the quest starts, but yeah.
I don't know. As someone who doesn't really like halflings or hobbits, I'm kind of like, meh, why would I want to do that, right? I don't want to be half my normal size. But given, I wonder who the starter set is aimed at. Well, obviously collectors.
Right.
But I mean, if you're going to want to bring people into the game, where do most of the movies and where do most of the books happen? It's in the Shire and the main protagonists are hobbits.
Right.
So why not, I guess, why not do that since it's what people new to the game have probably experienced the most from the movies?
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I think, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. And they're just elaborating on the original rule set and setting. So I'm really curious about it, but I don't know.
Not,
I don't know if I'll ever
not
play
Kickstarter
it.
Price.
Yeah. It's not, and it's not unreasonable. Like what they're offering for their Kickstarter, just like Twilight 2000, is very reasonable and really nice production quality. Mm. But it's just like, I can't get excited about it. I mean, the book is gorgeous.
Right.
I want to see the interior of the book, but I'm not sure if it's ever going to get to the table.
Right. Right.
But another thing they noted, because there might have been a little bit of complaining with, you know, a D6 system or you know, whatever this system is, Don't worry, there's a 5e version in the works. So it's not part of this Kickstarter, but of course they know people want to play. And I'm not sure if Cubicle 7 was ever considering that, but Free League is. Yeah, Free League says, okay, we've heard you, so we know that you want all of your...
From a business perspective, which I have never been to business school, so take any of my business perspective stuff with like a massive grain of salt. Business perspective, it makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
D&D, 5e.
Right, right. And I think that's the funny thing. That's why I've never, especially younger, I was obsessed with Tolkien, but played D&D. And even though there was an RPG, like there was a licensed RPG, I never thought to play that. Because like,
interesting. Okay.
Kind of already doing that. Like, what would be different? And
like, yeah. That's what it grew out of.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I mean, like, anyway. I think D&D's obviously become its own thing now. Right, like there are Tolkien and D&D are different, even if one grew out of the other. So I kind of understand saying, nope, these are different enough in tone and setting and kind of what you do that here's a Middle Earth game.
Right.
Again, there's a 5e version, I guess. So I shouldn't. I can poo-poo on D&D all I want, but I don't like it. But again, I wonder how much combat features in the One Ring.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because my impression is that D&D, regardless of what you want to say it is a combat simulator with some role-playing game wrapped around it. Will that fit with what you're supposed to do in the One Ring? I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm sure people will buy it.
And well, one of the things they listed that they're going to produce are stance cards. So I guess that's a mechanic. So that does kind of sound like it's kind of combat. The combat is a big part of what's going on because your character has different stances, you know, for different effects and things in combat, and you can keep track of it with like rotating a card. So yeah, I think they are doing combat, and yeah, I guess, and you can just do some Shire brawling.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, I'm not saying combat does not feature at all
right.
in the Lord of the Rings or Tolkien stuff. I mean, it does.
Yeah, wave that torch at the Nazgul.
But I mean, like, yeah, there's some stuff like you just can't fight or you shouldn't fight.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, yeah.
How do you represent that in D&D? I mean, besides giving them, I don't know, unless they change rules, mass number of hit points and some kind of like fear effect aura and stuff where it's kind of like, y'all really should run away from this. Like, no, but we're heroes, what am I going to do? And it's like, if D&D has taught us anything and she just keep hitting something until it dies, I'm like, all right, we're doing this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ask me how I really feel about it. Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll see how it's received. I mean, already like 4 minutes it was funded.
Oh, of course,
of
course.
People are just like, wow. Yeah, they've been, you know, excited about this. And it looks good. It looks really, really good. So the kind of range of pledges, so for about $60 US, you can get the core rule book, a PDF only of the starter set, and then all the unlocked digital stretch goals.
Okay.
Then it goes up to, I think, like $90 for physical copies of everything.
Okay.
And then my precious pledge level is 145 US, and that's the deluxe, like the faux leather cover is the only real difference. It has a lot of gold embossing and adornments. And if you're a collector, if you're a collector, it probably will be worth it to have the nicer version. Although the guts are usually the same, like maybe do the edging, but the paper quality and stuff doesn't jump up tremendously from what I've seen.
Okay.
I mean, that may not be true with this edition. And it is nice. It is nice looking. So probably that limited might be the collectors. Yeah, that's what you're calling collectors. So it's the limited 10th anniversary of the game collector's edition that they're only going to publish for this Kickstarter. Okay. So there's no retail, as they say. People have said that before, and that's not been true.
Oh, well.
So, yeah, so that's going on for the next however many weeks from when this is posted. And take a look at that and kind of see what you think.
Maybe we're just dead wrong about how the One Ring plays.
Yeah, yeah. And it does seem like, though, it is a ticking clock, and there is kind of a, you know, a doomsday thing. So maybe, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it does kind of build and have an interesting mechanic that... as the ring is moving and as things progress.
Similar vein.
Oh, yes.
A couple points. The Cortex Prime Tales of Zadia.
Oh, yeah.
Role-playing game.
Mm-hmm.
As of February 9th, the playtest documents are available and the pre-order for the book is available.
Nice.
And the reason it kind of dovetails is it's like close to $50 for a physical copy of the book and a link or a code to a downloadable PDF once the book gets released, which is not unreasonable for a hardback RPG book. Shipping to Japan bumped that up to like close to $90. And I said, that's not unreasonable. As much as I like Cortex Prime,
yeah.
This seems like a book I'm going to have to send to the States because I'm not $90 interested in it.
Yeah.
And especially given that it's the Dragon Prince, which I'm now finished episode 3 of at Alan's prodding to give continue to give stuff a chance, which I kind of wish the show had started with episode 3. But anyway, that's another one where I'm guessing there's going to be main characters and a main thrust, and they're up to like season 3. There's going to be a 4. I seriously doubt you play the characters from the show.
Right.
So it's kind of like, here are our ancillary characters, and maybe you're going to see events that are going on. But again, I know nothing about the IP. The playtest adventure has all new characters and seems like a fairly decent adventure that I don't think connects in any way to the main plot.
Oh.
So kind of like with the One Ring, maybe you're just playing kind of people in this world and having your own adventures while a main quest goes on over here.
Yeah.
And you can interact with it or not
as
your group sees fit.
Is the setting interesting enough that you want to make characters in it?
I can't really tell you.
Yeah.
I can say that based on like the intro to the show, that was a struggle to get through episode 1. And I'm kind of being mean where I'm just kind of like, this seems like bog standard fantasy. And you haven't really given me anything that made me want to keep watching. Maybe I'm in the minority because the Tales of Zadia Discord server that's part of that Cortex Prime thing is just, I feel like I am being left out of something amazing a little bit. But I mean, like, I guess fans of it are rabid. And a couple of people have said the first season is not great and you kind of get through it, which I have feelings about irregardless of the show, right? Like if someone says, you should watch this piece of media, but the first season kind of hard to get through, I'm just like, well, then why am I doing it, right?
Yeah, they failed. They botched the job if they can't hook you. I mean, first episode should hook you.
Yeah, so, there's a difference between kind of developing and getting better. And you kind of got to get through the first season, right? Those two things are very different for me.
Yeah, so it's interesting because some of these big IPs, it's making me think that are they just like fan fiction simulators? You know, it's like if you want to play, you could just play the name character.
Oh, you could.
You could roll all of the name characters from the show if they don't already give you those stats and just improv fan fiction.
Which I honestly see no problem with, right? As someone who has come kind of within the past couple of years come around to playing named characters, I think it works better with episodic shows because then you that kind of begin and end at the same place because then you can kind of be like, here's a lost episode or, you know, I want to see this happen with these characters. And it is a way to do that and that's totally fun and there's kind of nothing wrong with it. But I don't know, for longer campaign games like we're kind of discussing, I wonder how that works, right?
Right. Yeah, and I happen to know someone that at least tweets as a sullen-eyed barbarian. So, I mean, I guess you don't have a problem with playing as licensed characters.
I do not have a problem playing as licensed characters, although Conan the Sailor Man is distinct from Conan the Barbarian.
Yes, of course. Yes.
They've had previous similar pasts, but
different employment.
Different
career routes. Yes, right. Well, to kind of put stuff in context with the second edition of the One Ring, let's take a quick look, just kind of a survey of what's been produced previously.
Sure.
So the very first licensed Tolkien RPG was Middle Earth Role Playing, so MERP.
Okay. Yep.
Right. And that was in 1982. So right at the the basic box and the expert was coming out.
I wonder. And I don't have enough details on what actually happened. I wonder if MERP kind of got caught up in the satanic panic thing.
I don't know. Yeah, there's a little
bit of idea, but I would wonder, like, because there's a difference between here's a game based on kind of a classic
Right.
work of fiction, and here's a game about fighting demons and stuff.
It probably had a lot to do with like what they portrayed in the art and the things of the book, because I think that's where D&D really hurt itself, is some of the illustrations. Like, parents were like, what are you reading? Why, you know, why is she topless? You know, there was a lot of that kind of panic in the 80s. But yeah, so 1982. And so it was licensed. So it was Iron Crown Enterprises published it. And they lost the license in September of 99.
Wow, that's kind of a long time.
So I don't know how active it was. I mean, it seemed like they did produce a lot of content for that first setting. And the so they did a first and second edition, and were working on a third, but it was never published. And then they went bankrupt in 2000.
So it couldn't have been that successful. Right. Or who knows? Maybe there was other kinds of mismanagement.
Right.
Or not.
But so right after they lost the license, they went bankrupt. So I think there was a relationship there.
Maybe.
But in the UK, Games Workshop published that in 85. And in Sweden, Target Games published a version, the Swedish translation of it, in 86. And also in Japan in 87, was a Japanese edition. So I think, you know,
imagine what the cover of that thing looked like based on the cover of D&D stuff here.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so it was pretty widespread and localized in a lot of countries. And the rule system was a streamlined version of their generic fantasy.
Okay.
Yeah, so maybe that's why it kind of stuck, held in there, because it matched what people were doing with D&D. And yeah, so it wasn't all that different. And so fast forward 2 years to, you know, that's a shame, because they lost the license right as the Peter Jackson movies were coming out. They went bankrupt. And so Decipher Inc. Picked up the license in 2002, and they did the Lord of the Rings role-playing game.
Okay.
And this, of course, takes place the years between The Hobbit and The Fellowship of the Ring, but maybe you can have rules to play in First, Second, or Third Age, or even Fourth Age.
Fourth Age is industrial.
What is that? It's a suburb.
First Age, man. Okay.
Right. So it was a source book with the events of all the Jackson films was involved. So, yeah, they were really taking advantage, just like Games Workshop did the miniatures game that was licensed.
Was still one of the better Games Workshop games. I think.
Yeah. Nice. So this system was their coda system and involved two D6s to resolve actions. And so they did that. And they won the Origins Award for Best Role-Playing Game in 2002. Right. So yeah, I guess it was decently received. And then now if we skip forward to 2011, that's when the One Ring was done by Cubicle 7. And the designer, who was also working with Free League, Francesco Napitello and Marco Maggi. The first edition of the games were published in 2011, and then, of course, discontinued in 2019, but they're back. So now Free League
is discontinued in 2019.
I think because, Cubicle 7, I mean, they're still available.
Right.
They're just not producing anything else. And I don't know if the original designers are working. Maybe some notes and stuff are, making it into the... and as they said, the first edition... source books will be compatible, so you can still use those. And so, so there is a second edition now on Kickstarter.
I kind of thought there would have been more Lord of the Rings games, but
I think they're, as far as this is only RPGs, licensed RPGs.
Oh, I'm sure there's other times.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people that are kind of like, it's Lord of the Rings-ish. Yeah, it's Lord of the Rings-esque.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff that emulated that, but it wasn't licensed. So this is kind of the quick history of license. So I think, so the thing that seemed to do the best was that original, the MERP. MERP was the longest lived of all of those.
Well, longest lived doesn't mean like...
And it probably and has to do with the license too.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Like where the license is going. So, speaking of, let's take a look at what we have on the table here. Speaking of stuff, so I've been a little frustrated. I think doing Star Wars role playing and then the Dune play test. Mm-hmm. It's like, IPs and worlds that have lore and there's history, even if it's fictional, you've got a setting and there's things that happen and you should know from the books or from the source material how things go.
Right.
And that's the thing that really appeals to me about Troika, which is the book on the table. So basically like sci-fi fantasy. So in that time before there was a distinction.
So Keep on the Borderlands.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
not Keep on the Borderlands. Whatever.
Yes.
I just lost my nerd cred. Expedition to Barrier Peak somewhere. That's the one. Yeah,
the next
got
one
it back.
Where you start venturing. Yeah, you start venturing into a UFO.
Yeah.
Right. So Troika is by Daniel Sell. And basically, it's a D6. It's a 2D6 system. So essentially fighting fantasy.
Okay.
Yeah. Mechanics is what you're using for this, for combat and everything. And it has a setting, but the setting is completely open to interpretation. So you roll like a D66 to determine your kind of character you're playing, and they give you some motivation or kind of flavor, but you can interpret that any way you want.
Cool.
So if you're playing a Death Knight, you can decide what that is, and you know who you serve, and what exactly exactly what that is. But you know, there it's allowing you to kind of interpret things. So there's a lot of like world building and kind of character input, or I'm sorry, player input that happens,
right,
as the characters kind of fit into the world. And I like that a lot, because it's not like no.
Yeah.
Not in the no.
This is what Death Knights are. It's like, right, or is this the kind of more step back, like, oh cool, Death Knight, you tell me what that is.
Yeah. So I like that aspect of it a lot, and that'll eliminate, I mean, it'll you'll participate in the world a lot more as a player, and not feel like I don't know what happened after that planet was destroyed, you know.
Yeah, I really don't like those games either, right?
Yeah, so
your character wouldn't do that.
And so, and then a setting book for Troika is Acid Death Fantasy. So that's by Luke Gearing.
That sounds real happy.
Yes, it's wonderful. So it's a very just this like blighted desert setting where water is the value and currency, and you know, people are hoarding it. So they give you,
so Tank Girl.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you read through and kind of get, it's another D66. Right. So you determine your characters with that, and then also enemies are done, or you know, generated that same way. So like random encounters, right, and things. But if you read the descriptions, you get a sense of like what they're hinting at. Mm. For the setting, but still in the same vein, it's open to interpretation. Right. But both of these books have very kind of inspirational art. Okay. It really gives you a tone of the setting. And what I was thinking with Troika, at least in the original setting, is it would be really fun to just draw as you were talking and just do like, you know, just flip line art drawings onto the table. Yeah, this is what he looks like. This is where you are. That would be so fun to be creating a visual story.
Your ability to generate income for a Troika illustration pack.
Right. Yeah, it would be really fun to do. I like that idea of you know, you're just contributing, and these things are happening, and you can represent it, because the visuals are so inspiring in both of the books, that they give you a real sense of.
I think I have Troika as PDF, but hadn't actually read it. Acid Death Fantasy intrigued me just because of like the art and the name.
Oh yeah.
And as someone who is kind of, I guess, getting a little burned out on the whole grim dark, everything is bleak and gray and covered in mud and shit, and you're just scraping along. How bleak is Acid Death Fantasy? Because it seems like it could be.
Right.
And I'm just curious.
Yeah, you could play it very bleak and very survivalist, like you're barely going to make it. But I think because it's basically, the description was a kingdom was broken, but the pieces still exist. So it's like so a kingdom was shattered, and these like sultanates exist.
Okay.
So you have all of this ability to travel over this dead wasteland, but there's really interesting goals and really interesting things that you can adventure. And so it's not only going to be, oh, everyone is so
blighted and irradiated.
Yeah, right.
Watch out for the death worms.
Yeah, right. But I'm sure the you can play up that kind of survival crawling between the cities, or just, oh, and we took a glider to the city, and then you know, we're encountering this.
Oh, I know a better way to put it. Is it like Mad Max or Mad Max Beyond the Thunderdome, which is still kind of bleak and desperate, but I mean, the bad guys are still decked out in like feathers and like no one seems to be like really starved? Or are we talking like The Road, which is a movie you watch once and then done?
No, you're all like remnants of this broken kingdom, but things still exist. Like the kingdom is shattered, but the pieces still exist. So it's not post-apocalypse.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just that things have dissolved, so you're going to encounter really random odd situation. So everybody has decided to run their little sultanate different than they would have than the previous kingdom. And you're still, you know, like knights and architects and wizards and things from that setting. So it's not like everything is lost. Yeah,
okay.
You're not like searching out. But it's just that because of the desert setting that the water is the resource. So you have like the richest, you know, people just floating in these glass globes of water right. to show off there.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. So it's more European comic than it feels like some post-apocalypse. Right. Yeah, it has okay. a really nice really nice aesthetic that I think the illustrations are really evocative. So I think they would, give you a really good sense of, okay, this is what we're doing. So pretty Baroque. Not too worn out in that kind of Australian aesthetic of like, yeah, we have feathers and war paint, but we don't know why anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
and football shoulder pads, and I don't know why we're doing this.
I did like that bit of Fury Road where it's kind of like, you got the sense that these traditions had been passed down to the point where they didn't kind of mean anything and the meaning had been lost when they're like, you know, spray painting their mouths, silver, like that. And you're like, okay, that's pretty cool. I like that. This at one time had a purpose. Mm-hmm. We no longer know what it is, kind of future.
Yeah, thing. And how, like, he comes up with these ideas, like George Miller has these ideas, or whoever he's collaborating with, that they kind of reference, like, the War Boys spraying metallic paint is like paint huffing kids.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just like there's these weird kind of cultural, it's like, of course, they would get high before they went to Valhalla. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I like that. And I'm sure there's a lot of those kinds of things you can include in a setting like that, like Acid Death Fantasy, that's so open, you can kind of like, you know, tweak things and have things that resonate a little bit differently. Oh, but cool. Yeah, so I was excited to that both of these came and wanted to, kind of refresh myself and not be in something that has a lore that I have to read before I roll my character.
Yeah, no thanks.
Nice.
Cool.
All right. So that's it for this
week.
Yeah. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, HiveMind, HYVEMYND. And I just released a little pocket mod game called Brighthammer.
Oh, nice.
Which is rules light high fantasy based on that Sledgehammer game that I talked about last time.
Right.
Basically, I called it Brighthammer because I just wiped all the mud, blood, and shit off of it. And it's now high fantasy.
Nice. Excellent. A little isopropyl and you're good to go.
How about you?
So I do a weekly single panel gag cartoon that I live stream the drawing of that. So look for Abuse Cartoons on YouTube and Twitch, and abusecartoons.com is the website. And also every Tuesday I'm posting AI read speculative fiction short stories on Enmity Stories. So there's a podcast for that as well as a YouTube channel, and you can go to Enmity Corp, NMITYCORP.com as the website for where those stories exist. So you can listen to them there or subscribe to the podcast or access the YouTube channel from there.
No, cool.
So that's all for this week. So we'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye.